welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, November 23rd on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article on the front page, Bagley Native receives state recognition for her service. Former Chief Petty Officer Joanne Dickerson is named 2020 Woman Veteran of the Year by Bennett Goldstein, Bagley, Wisconsin. When Joanne Dickerson considers the work that women of the American Legion and American Legion Auxiliary are conducting across Wisconsin, she says her efforts to help others are hardly unique. Rather, volunteerism is part of what means to be human. Nonetheless, the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs recently named the Bagley Native of the 2020 Women Veteran of the Year, an honor that recognizes women veterans with records of exemplary service. Quote, I'm just an ordinary person, end quote, Dickerson said. Quote, I was just overwhelmed that I was picked, end quote. Dickerson, 62, enlisted in the U.S. Navy in 1980. During her 20 years of service, she was stationed in 5 cities and sailed on 3 ships, attaining the rank of Chief Petty Officer. During her service, she oversaw payroll, fiscal accounting, and paying sailors for travel expenses. Dickerson spent the final 4 years teaching in the military. Military service runs in Dickerson's family. Her grandfather fought in World War I, while her father and 2 of his brothers served during the Second World War. 2 more of her uncles fought in the Korean War. Likewise, 3 of Dickerson's brothers served in Vietnam, but Dickerson was the only woman in her immediate family to enlist in the military. She described her parents' reaction as, quote, reluctant, end quote. Quote, as a child, I was a pretty reserved individual, and my parents never thought I would leave home, end quote, Dickerson said. When she was honorably discharged from the Navy in 2000, she returned to Bagley, where she raised her 3 children and later began a career at St. Mary's School in the nearby community of Bloomington. Now in her 19th year in education, she instructs 5th through 8th graders in math, science, and social studies. Like her military service, Dickerson attributes her involvement in veterans affairs to her family. Her father and mother held leadership positions in the American Legion and Legion Auxiliary, respectively. Quote, my parents were always helping others and taking care of other people, end quote, she said. It was common for her family to invite guests to dinner table when they had nowhere else to go. In 2012, the American Legion started a fund for women veterans who were homeless or at risk of being homeless. The program provides grants for expenses like transportation and rent, and Dickerson sits on its review board. Quote, they are a hidden population, she said. The great number of women that we assist through our program are either women that have a disability rating and they are struggling to maintain employment, they have children, so they have employment to be able to support their families, and quite often they are exiting abusive relationships, end quote. Dickerson also transports veterans to medical appointments and participates in the Veterans in Classroom program, which provides young people with firsthand accounts of military service and encourages the honoring of veteran sacrifices. Dickerson has served in multiple leadership positions at American Legion Post 482 in Bagley as adjutant on the American Legion Grand County Council and as an officer of American Legion Auxiliary Unit 482. She currently is president of the American Legion Auxiliary Department of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers commended Dickerson, stating in a message of congratulations that she harnessed the leadership and teaching skills she cultivated in the military for the betterment of veterans and youth. Jim Hine, an American Legion member from Muscoda, who is an active at the county and district levels of the organization, has worked with Dickerson. Quote, I think she well deserved it, he said of the award. She is very outgoing and just gets the job done, end quote. Velias Barrers, the commander of Post 482, said he is proud of Dickerson. Quote, because we've got somebody here that is interested in the Legion, he said. We don't have many veterans left in Bagley, end quote. His brother, Dennis Ducky Bowers, the post adjutant, said Dickerson has been very active, noting that she has been encouraging people to renew their memberships to the post. One of the greatest needs among veterans, Dickerson said, is health care and social support. Quote, we have many veterans who live alone, she said, especially during this COVID issue. They are dealing with this lack of social contact. That's a pretty significant thing, end quote. Our next front page article, Biz Buzz, Gym to Close Its Doors, Medical Clinics Open, Greyhound Park Celebrates Big Year by Jeff Montgomery, Telegraph Herald senior reporter. BizBuzz shares business tidbits from around the tri-state area. This week, we'd highlight developments in Dubuque. A locally owned gym will close its doors at the end of 2020. Signature Health and Fitness will close December 31st, according to co-owner Jill Lane. She said the business was hit hard by the COVID-19 pandemic, which forced the gym to shut down completely for 2 months and later abide by occupancy limitations. Even in recent months, Lane said, many patrons just didn't feel comfortable going to a gym to work out. She noted that the onslaught of COVID-19 coincided with the impending expiration of the gym's lease at 2055 Holiday Drive. Given the uncertainty surrounding the pandemic, Lane said it did not seem financially feasible to lease a new location and make the necessary investment to get that space up and running. Jill Lane and her husband, Pat, opened Signature Fitness in January 2012. She called the business a, quote, true labor of love, end quote, and emphasized that it has been a family business. The Lanes' daughter, Amanda, and son, Nick, both have played important roles in the business. Quote, we had all different kinds of people coming in here, she said. We had student athletes and seniors and young professionals. We took a lot of pride in being a place where anyone could feel comfortable and connected, end quote. As customers have learned about the closure, the Lanes have received an outpouring of support from the members, Jill Lane said. Once the decision to close had been made, the Lanes aimed to be transparent and tell their members as quickly as possible. Quote, we've seen other businesses close without warning, and we didn't want to do that, she said. We want our members to know that we will continue to be here for them throughout the rest of 2020. We're going to look exactly the same and serve them the same way we did until the day we close. We hope they stick around until then, end quote. Signature Fitness can be reached at 563-587-8052. New kind of clinic. A medical clinic with an unorthodox approach is opening in Prairie du Chien. Fennimore Medical Clinic opens today at 421 South Beaumont Road in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, according to Dr. Scott Walker. He said the clinic is named after the community in which he previously lived for a decade. Walker said the clinic will consist of him and just one other employee, ensuring a level of personal service that doesn't exist at many medical facilities. Quote, I am not seeing 35 patients a day, he said, and when you call here, there is a 50% chance that I will be the one answering the phone, end quote. Unlike the vast majority of other medical offices, Fennimore Medical Clinic will not accept insurance, and all in services are paid for at the time of the visit. Walker said he is providing doctor visits for $39. He acknowledged that the business model is unique in Wisconsin. Quote, Wisconsin has the highest percentage in the nation of physicians employed in large groups, and large groups are insurance-based healthcare businesses, he said. Here in Prairie du Chien and the surrounding area, there are a lot of people in agriculture who have only catastrophic health insurance, so they don't see doctors on a regular basis, end quote. Walker said his clinic will also be conducting rapid COVID-19 tests, with results arriving in as little as 15 minutes. He emphasized that such services will help reduce community spread and give patients peace of mind. Quote, people want to know, is it safe to visit mom? He said. Having a negative test isn't 100% reassuring, but it's a pretty good indicator of whether it's safe to visit family, end quote. Fennimore Medical Clinic can be reached at 608-326-1997. Greyhound Park records big year. Dubuque's Greyhound racing track continued to show signs of positive growth in 2020. Iowa Greyhound Park, located at 1899 Greyhound Park Road in Dubuque, recently reported a total handle of $15.6 million in 2020. That is up more than 55% from last year's total of $9.9 million. The handle refers to the amount of wagers on races taking place at Dubuque Greyhound Park, as well as wagers made by those who are physically at the park and betting on races elsewhere. The Dubuque Greyhound Track is the last remaining dog racing facility in the state of Iowa. While the track is physically attached to the Q Casino, it has been a separate business entity since casinos in Dubuque and Council Bluffs reached a settlement agreement with the Greyhound industry in 2014. Reflecting on that split, racing director Brian Carpenter emphasized that the track performed better than expected in the year since. Quote, that first year, no one thought we'd even open, he recalled. Now we are crushing the numbers from back then. I think we've exceeded expectations, end quote. Carpenter said the primary key to the rising betting numbers lies in the, quote, export handle, end quote, which reflects bettors at other facilities who are placing wagers on races taking place at the Dubuque Park. Despite these improving numbers, officials have acknowledged that the long-term prospects for the facility are not good. Subsidies supporting Greyhound racing are set to expire after the 2022 season, and the suspension of racing at other facilities is expected to lead to a slowdown in a Greyhound breeding and a shortage of dogs available for racing. Our last front page article, "'Tis the Season in November. Dubuque residents get an early start to on decorating ahead of unique holiday period," by Megan Gloss. Rihanna's Papes Dubuque home took an unusual twist during the witching season. Among the spooky decor stood a Christmas tree. Quote, "I actually had my tree up before Halloween," Papes said with a laugh. "I've always loved decorating for Christmas and always have my tree up before Thanksgiving. But this year, between COVID-19, working from home, and not really having any social interaction, and having it to put my fur baby down, I have been feeling like I'm missing out. Christmas decorations make me happy, and I wanted to feel happy and excited," end quote. It didn't stop there. Pape, who has two children, ages 5 and 16, at home, also has been spinning holiday tunes each morning as she begins her workday. She has been working remotely for Medline Industries since March. Quote, "I even have a Christmas countdown by my desk that I update each day," Pape said. "Alexa has been playing Christmas music for a week now, and I diffuse my Christmas spirit essential oils. It has really helped give me something to be excited about, despite knowing that the holidays will look very different this year," end quote. For a few residents across the Tri-State area, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, even though Thanksgiving is still a few days away. Ooh La La manager Kathy Olson said that while many typically wait to decorate until after Thanksgiving, this year has been an exception. Ooh La La is located at 3460 Hillcrest Road in Dubuque. Quote, "With COVID, many people are decorating earlier this year and with more decorations," end quote, said Olson, who began decorating homes for residents with her staff on November 1st. Quote, "So many people have been spending so much time in their homes. They want to be surrounded by the pretty lights and the festive ornaments. There is a joy that comes from holiday decorating. We need it this year more than ever. This way, they can enjoy it longer as well," end quote. Courtney Goodendorf of Dubuque said she and her family are among those heeding the advice of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention by staying put as much as possible, though the reality of the circumstances has hit harder with the holidays on the horizon. Because of that, their tree went up on November 1st, in addition to other Christmas frivolities, to help the family feel a little merrier. Quote, "We turned the Christmas music on loud, cleaned the house together, and decorated the whole house for something fun to do at home," end quote, said Goodendorf, who has three kids, ages 9 through 13. Quote, "Our elf Twinkle even came back early so he could quarantine, of course, and so he could start his crazy fun. It helped my kids a lot. It gave us something to look forward to, even if it looks different," end quote. Gauging emotional health. Lori Murphy is a counselor at Body and Soul Wellness Center and Spa, 2728 Asbury Road, Suite 777, and Clark University. She suspects that those who have decided to decorate well ahead of Christmas this year might be coming to terms with a holiday season that could present heightened emotional health challenges, even following months of remaining distant from loved ones. Quote, "This year, more than ever, people seem less focused on the hustle and bustle and more focused on finding meaningful connections," end quote, she said. "The emotional boost of getting a jump on festivities early could be substantial," Murphy added, "particularly for those who have spent a greater amount of time at home in recent months and might already be struggling with feelings of isolation or depression." Quote, "I think it's immensely helpful," she said. "I've even encouraged people navigating depression during other times of the year to create a Christmas in June. Christmas is often associated with predictability and routine. We associate it with smells, food, and connecting with others. How can we keep that joy and find creative ways to honor those connections? Holiday decorating is a timeless reminder of that fun, playfulness, and normality," end quote. However, finding that sense of normality could prove tricky. To slow the spread of COVID-19, health experts have advised families to stay home for the holidays, surrounding themselves with immediate family members they can come into contact with daily in lieu of traveling. According to the CDC, the risk for exposure or spreading the virus can be greater during medium-sized gatherings, even when practicing social distance. Large gatherings, including individuals who have traveled and cannot be spaced at least 6 feet apart, posed the greatest risk. Murphy encouraged people to explore new traditions as well as bridge the gap created by COVID-19. Quote, what I'm noticing is a lot of divisiveness in families right now as they are planning for Christmas, end quote, she said. Quote, you have one camp who is very concerned, another who is backing away out of anger that COVID-19 is still happening, and another who aren't as concerned. I emphasize that what we are going through right now is not normal. Describing it as a new normal tends to scare people into thinking that it will always be this way. It won't. It's temporary and is only this way until we get a handle on the pandemic, but we need to try to be understanding of each other's fears, end quote. It's a common ground that Murphy said can be found in self-awareness exercises, something those experiencing anxiety surrounding this year holidays season can tune into when determining what they need, even if that means tossing tinsel on the tree earlier than usual. Quote, check in with yourself 3 times a day to notice what you're feeling, what kind of thoughts you are carrying, and what kind of brain trash you can dump, she said. It's like sailing a ship. You don't want to check in at the end of the day to discover that you're 115 miles off course. This is where things like meditation and yoga can be great to help yourself pay attention to the chatter in your head and know what you need. Maybe that's Netflix, talking to someone, or taking a long walk. Maybe it's more sleep, end quote. Seeking the help of a counselor could be beneficial, Murphy said. Quote, for givers and care providers especially, you can't pour from an empty cup, she said. I encourage anyone who wants to find a different way to deal with what life throws at them to seek counseling. This time of year especially, we need to do what makes us happy, end quote. Dubuque and Tri-State Section, 90 new virus cases in Dubuque County. Dubuque and Lafayette counties see one additional COVID-19 death each. Jones County sees increase of 19 cases, Telegraph Herald. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Sunday's developments included Dubuque County had 90 additional cases of COVID-19 between 5 p.m. Saturday and 5 p.m. Sunday. The county's 14-day test positivity rate was 20.5%. As of the latter time. The county also reported an additional related death, increasing the toll to 90. By subtracting the number of related deaths and recovered from the number of confirmed cases, there were 3,394 active cases in the county as of 5 p.m. Sunday, an increase of 53 cases from 24 hours earlier. Jones County had another 19 cases in the 24-hour period. Its 14-day positivity stands at 38.4%, the highest in the state. The county's case count has increased in conjunction with an outbreak at Anamosa State Penitentiary. The Iowa Department of Corrections reported 71 COVID-19 positive inmates, a total of 3 inmate deaths, and 43 positive staffs as of Friday afternoon, the most recent data available. Clayton County had 17 new cases in the 24-hour period. The county's 14-day positivity rate increased to 27.3%. Jackson County had 18 new cases in a rate of 25.9%. Delaware County had 14 new cases in a rate of 24.1%. The State Health Department reported county-level hospitalization data from Friday. As of Friday, 59 Dubuque County residents with COVID-19 were hospitalized. Also hospitalized were 22 infected Jones County residents, 16 from Clayton County, 13 from Jackson County, and 8 from Delaware County. The state continues to track outbreaks at 10 area long-term care facilities. As of 5 p.m. Sunday, the counts were Luther Manor Communities Dubuque, 82 cases, Manor Care Health Services of Dubuque, 14 cases, Shady Rest Care Center Cascade, 13 cases, Dubuque Specialty Care, 70 cases, Good Neighbor Home, Manchester, 81 cases, Edgewood Convalescent Home, 8 cases, Anamosa Care Center, 60 cases, Monticello Nursing and Rehab Center, 30 cases, Elkader Care Center, 9 cases, an increase of 1 case, Great River Care Center in McGregor, 35 cases. Iowa statewide confirmed case count stood at 210,518 at 5 p.m. Sunday, an increase of 2,843 over 24 hours earlier. The state's related death toll rose by 32 to 2,192. In Wisconsin, Lafayette County reported 6 additional cases and an additional related death, increasing the totals to 1,017 cases with 3 deaths. Crawford County reported 35 additional cases. Iowa County reported 18 additional cases. Grant County did not report new numbers as of Sunday evening. Statewide, Wisconsin reported 3,507 additional cases in 24 hours, increasing the state's total to 354,676. The state did not report any additional deaths, so the total remains at 3,005. In Illinois, Joe Davies County reported 31 new cases and 1 additional death Sunday. Statewide, there were 10,012 additional cases in Illinois for a total of 656,298. The death toll stands at 11,506, a 24-hour increase of 76. Our next article, Person Who Makes a Difference, Volunteer Seeks to End Brain Health Stigma by Eric Hogstrom. Brooklyn Williams, age 53, residents of Dubuque, occupation, retired, on disability, civic involvement, volunteer with the Fountain of Youth program by Eric Hogstrom. What might look like a simple act of passing out ski hats means much more to Brooklyn Williams. Quote, I want to be a voice of advocacy to pay back what Dubuque has paid to me, end quote, said Williams, 53, a volunteer with the Fountain of Youth program. A logo on the hat calls for an end to the stigma surrounding brain health issues, an idea driving Williams forward to a new life in Dubuque. Quote, she is very passionate about brain health matters, and since we started collaborating with the Brain Health Now initiative, she has taken it in full stride, trying to educate people in the area about why it's important to eliminate the stigmas around brain health, end quote, said Rose Simon Ressler, Fountain of Youth's donor, development, and marketing manager. Williams said she didn't always feel as if she had a voice. She fled a violent attack in her native Missouri in the fall of 2019 and eventually arrived in Dubuque. Quote, I have a best friend who lives at Yosemite Towers, Williams said. She helped me find a safe place to come. It was a long, complicated process to get from there to here, end quote. Williams initially resided in Teresa's Shelter, a facility that offers emergency and extended stay services to homeless women. She now lives in her own home and is recovering from spinal issues that had prompted her to use a wheelchair. She uses a walker now. Quote, after coming out of Teresa's shelter, I worked with Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign, she said. I did IT work for them, end quote. Williams also heard about the Fountain of Youth program and met its founder and director, Caprice Jones. Quote, I just started coming in, end quote, she said. Williams enrolled in Fountain of Youth's core program, Partners in Change. The 6-month program assists participants in reaching a variety of personal goals through the use of one-on-one mentoring meetings. Quote, Brooklyn was a very committed participant, Simon Ressler said. She really is determined toward her goals, end quote. Williams has set her sights on studying psychology next year at Loras College. Quote, her goal of getting an education in psychology and brain health directly leads to what she is doing, end quote, Simon Ressler said. Fountain of Youth is collaborating with Brian Health Now, an initiative that seeks to end the stigma associated with mental health issues, with a change in terminology to brain health being one of the ways to shed previous images. Quote, a lot of times when we think of mental health, there's a negative stigma around it, Simon Ressler said. That's why it's important to change our language so we can change the stigma and help people understand that just like any other organ in the body, the brain can become sick, end quote. Williams passes out ski hats with the message of ending the brain health stigma to as many people as possible. She keeps a supply with her wherever she goes in Dubuque. She said providing the hats helps give a voice to people who might feel voiceless. Quote, everyone who has a condition on illness or any connection to mental health issues, they have a minimal voice or no voice in things like domestic violence law, Williams said. As a violence survivor, I had no voice. Now, as I am healing and finally getting my voice, I wish to be a voice for those people, end quote. Our next article, police, Dubuque man broke infant daughter's leg, Telegraph Herald. A Dubuque man is accused of breaking his infant daughter's leg and causing a brain bleed and other serious injuries. Luke P. Heim, 19, of 895 Kirkwood Street, was arrested at 5:20 p.m. Saturday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on warrants charging child endangerment with serious injury in violation of a no-contact order. Court documents made available Sunday state that the 2-month-old girl suffered a fractured femur, bleeding in the brain, blood spots in both eyes, and bruising to the neck and chest area. Her mother, Gabriella M. Fondel, 19, of 2256 White Street, reported that she dropped off the infant and her one-year-old sister at Heim's residence at about 1 p.m. Friday so they could spend the night. When Heim picked up Fondel on Saturday with the girls, Fondel noticed that the two-month-old, quote, was having difficulty breathing and her eyes were red, end quote. Fondel told Heim to drive to Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center, where doctors started treating the child and staff called the police. The child later was airlifted to University of Iowa hospitals and clinics in Iowa City. Investigators reported that Heim told them that he was upset with Fondel while watching the girls. Heim told authorities that while he was upset back at his residence, he placed the infant in, quote, her bassinet, striking her head on the edge. He didn't think it was that hard, end quote, documents state. Quote, Heim also admitted to striking the infant's head off of a door jamb in the kitchen as he was spinning around forcibly as he was upset with Fondel, end quote, he allegedly told investigators. The documents later stated, quote, Heim admitted as he was holding the infant and trying to keep her from crying, he was bouncing her and stated a couple of times the infant's head fell back and forward, describing the motion as whiplash, like when rear-ended from a car. Heim admitted to pulling the infant from a car seat where her leg got caught on a strap, and he continued to pull her out and believes that is how the infant had the injury to her leg, end quote. Finally, Heim told investigators that while he was holding the girl, she started to slip from his grasp, and he grabbed her, quote, body and chest tightly to keep her from falling, end quote. The no-contact order charge stems from Heim having contact with Fondel on Saturday at a friend's house. The order was put in place after Heim assaulted Fondel in April. Heim's next court appearance is scheduled for 8:30 a.m. Tuesday, November 24th at Dubuque County Courthouse. News in brief, Manchester man accused of pointing gun at tampering with witness state sentenced. Manchester, Iowa. A Manchester man recently was sentenced to probation for allegedly pointing a gun at another man and then trying to convince witnesses to change their stories days later. Michael T. Short, 55, was sentenced in Iowa District Court of Delaware County to 2 years of probation. He pleaded guilty to second-degree harassment, down from the original charge of assault while displaying a dangerous weapon, for the alleged firearm incident. He also pleaded guilty to tampering with a witness and received a deferred judgment on that charge. With a deferred judgment, if probation and payment obligations are successfully completed, the record of the case is expunged. Court documents state that Short was arguing with Gregory Coaster of Waukon on March 13th at a property in rural Manchester. Coaster was helping Janet pick up a utility vehicle from the property. Short became upset and pointed a revolver at Coaster. Authorities later located the revolver at the scene and Short was arrested. Documents state that on March 16th, Short texted Tayek, quote, and asked her to contact Gregory and have him drop the charges against Short, end quote. Short also, quote, attempted to influence Tayek's observations of the incident that had occurred, end quote. State awards tax credits for Manchester Manufacturers Expansion, Manchester, Iowa. The state has signed off on more than $500,000 in tax credits for a Manchester Manufacturers Expansion. The Iowa Economic Development Authority Board approved $507,000 in credits for XL specialized trailers, contingent on the business adding 65 positions over the next 3 years. With wages of at least $21.43 per hour and maintaining that total for at least 2 years. The company currently employs 160 people in Manchester and plans to expand its facility by 55,000 square feet. Company officials told the Telegraph Herald last week that the project would cost $5 million to $6 million, but state documents list a total investment of $7.4 million. Company officials also told the Telegraph Herald that they aimed to add the 65 positions by the end of next year. At that time, XL was working with the state in addition to the city to receive zoning permits and tax incentives, and the company hopes to begin construction on the project by the end of this year. Manchester City Manager Tim Vick previously said city council members will hold a public hearing during their December 14th meeting on a resolution to award XL specialized trailers an 80% tax rebate of up to $1.2 million over the course of the 10-year agreement. This financing method incentivizes property owners to improve or renovate their buildings by giving them back a portion of the increased property taxes they would have incurred as a result of the improvements. mobile food pantry event set for Monday in Jones County, Monticello, Iowa. A drive-through mobile food giveaway will be held today in Jones County. The event will be held from 3:30 to 4:30 p.m. at Monticello Public Library, 205 East Grand Street. Participants should park in the lot when they arrive. A staff member will direct participants to drive through the pickup line. Participants will remain in the vehicles, and volunteers will place items in the trunk or back seat. Police. The Dubuque Police and Dubuque County Sheriff's Departments reported Latasha L. Lewis, 30, of 2070 Jackson Street, was arrested at 8:25 p.m. Saturday at Dubuque Law Enforcement Center on a warrant charging domestic assault with injury. Court documents state that Lewis assaulted Carolyn P. Lewis, 57, of the same address on October 16th. We have one letter to the editor. Stalin, quote, resonates during election process. From Don Schmidt, 25226 Route 52 North, Holy Cross, Iowa. Apparently, the Democrats might have been right all along when they insisted that there was a Russian interference in our election process. They remembered the famous quote of Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin, who once said, quote, it is not important who votes, but it is only important who counts the votes, end quote. Moving to the obituaries, Mary K. Kutch. Mary K. Kutch, K-U-T-S-C-H, 94, of Dubuque, died Saturday, November 21st, 2020, at the Stonehill Care Center in Dubuque. A private family graveside service will be held Wednesday, November 24th, 2020, at Mount Calvary Cemetery. Mary was born June 7th, 1926, in Durango, Iowa, the daughter of Martin and Catherine Krug Benke. On August 21st, 1946, she married Walter M. Kutch at St. Peter's and Paul Catholic Church in Sherrill. Walter preceded her in death on March 28, 2012. She was a member of Saints Peter and Paul Parish in Sherrill and their Rosary Society. She is survived by her children, Kathy, spouse Gary Davis of Dubuque, Janet Cool of Portland, Oregon, Dennis, spouse Sandy Kutch of Dubuque, Mary Ann, spouse Don Davis of Sherrill, Dave, spouse Dee Kutch of Dubuque, Rita Kutch of Sherrill, Dan, spouse Sherry Kutch of Dubuque, Dale, spouse Stephanie Kutch of Prescott, Arizona, Don, spouse Rebecca Kutch of Maquita, Duane, spouse Angie Kutch of Dubuque, and Mark, spouse Lynn Kutch of Sherrill. 31 grandchildren, 47 great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, sisters-in-law, Bernice Neinsted of Dubuque, Clara, spouse Henry Kubitz of Dubuque, and Loretta Benke of Durango, and brothers-in-law Richard Kutch of Dubuque, Bernard, spouse Addie Kutch of St. Donatus. Besides her husband, she is also preceded in death by her parents, a sister, Marita Heim, daughter-in-law, Carol Kutch, brother Alfred Benke, a son-in-law, Bob Cool, a great-grandson, four brothers-in-law, Harold Kutch, Francis Kutch, Richard Heim, and Justin Neinsted, and two sisters-in-law, Lorraine Kutch and Delilah Kutch. Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Cremation Service is in care of the arrangements. Condolences sent to the family by visiting Marie's obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. Carol N. Hebert, Galena, Illinois. Carol Ann Hebert, 69, of Galena and formerly of Hanover, Illinois, passed away peacefully on Thursday, November 19th, 2020, at home after a courageous battle with cancer. Due to current COVID-19 restrictions, a private family service will be held at the Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery, Dubuque, Iowa. Carol was born July 19, 1951, in Savannah, Illinois, the daughter of Emery and Rita Hebert. She attended Hanover Grade School and graduated from Hanover High School with the class of 1970. Carol worked at the Joe Davies County Workshop, Galena, for 47 years until retiring on October 8, 2020. It was a job she enjoyed very much. Carol enjoyed her cats, reading in her early years, spending time with her great nieces and nephews, and going on car rides. She loved walking all over Hanover with her mother and talking with everyone she met. Carol is survived by her sisters, Betty, spouse Randy, Worcester of Dubuque, Bonnie's spouse Doug Folks of Galena, two brothers Edward Hebert of Galena and Richard spouse Charlotte Hebert of Woodbine, Illinois, five nephews, three nieces, eight great nieces, and four great nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents and a brother, Tommy. The family wishes to extend a special thank you to Tracy and Kim Folks for taking such good care of Carol. Hospice of Dubuque, especially Amy, Mariah, Heather, and Jennifer, the staff and doctors at Medical Associates Dubuque and Galena, your care and compassion will never be forgotten. Online condolences may be left at www.furlongfuneralchapel.com. John F. Stewart Jr., Dickeyville, Wisconsin. John F. Jack Stewart Jr., age 71, of Dickeyville, Wisconsin, passed away November 19, 2020 at Finley Hospital in Dubuque, Iowa. He was born in Dodgeville, Wisconsin on August 26, 1949, the son of John F. Stewart Sr. and Marion McKelvey Stower. Jack graduated from Platteville High School in 1968. Jack married Janet Fritz in Platteville, Wisconsin on January 9, 1971. He served in the U.S. Navy from 1969 until 1972, where he was stationed aboard the USS Sacramento, a ship that supplied troops during the Vietnam War. Jack went on to work for his dad at Star Uniforms in Dubuque, Iowa, eventually purchasing the business, which we ran until his retirement in 2013. In his free time, he enjoyed bowling, golfing, camping, boating, and especially spending time with his grandchildren. Jack is survived by his wife of 49 years, Janet, their children, Julie Thiel and John Stewart III, his grandchildren, Kaylee, CJ, and Ian Thiel, and former son-in-law, Brian Thiel. In addition to his parents, Jack was preceded in death by his in-laws, Donald and Jeanette Fritz. A private family service will be held on Saturday, November 28, 2020, at Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville, Wisconsin, with Robert McValley officiating. Burial will be in the Hillside Cemetery, Platteville. Martin Schwartz Funeral Home and Crematory in Platteville is entrusted with the services. The family would like to extend a special thank you to everyone at Finley Hospital for their care and compassion during Jack's illness, especially the ICU staff. Online condolences, www.martinschwartzfuneralhomes.com. Kenneth J. Mickles, Springbrook, Iowa. Kenneth J. Mickles, 91, of Springbrook, died on Saturday, November 21st, 2020. Visitation will be held from 9 a.m. to noon, Wednesday, November 25th, at St. Peter's and Paul Catholic Church in Springbrook. A funeral mass will be held at noon, Wednesday, at the church. Hatchman Muir Funeral Home and Cremation Service of Bellevue is assisting the family. Rita M. Willenbring, Farley, Iowa. Rita M. Willenbring, 94, of Farley, died on Sunday, November 22, 2020. Reef Funeral Home in Farley is assisting the family. Joanne T. Oding, Cascade, Iowa. Joanne T. Oding, 82, of Cascade, died on Saturday, November 21, 2020. Reef Funeral Home of Cascade is assisting the family. Alvera J. Mormon, Petersburg, Iowa. Alvera Vera Mormon, 1931 to 2020. Alvera Giuliani Niehaus Mormon, age 88, passed away Sunday, November 22, 2020 at Stonehill Care Center in Dubuque, Iowa, with family after a long struggle from breast cancer. A massive Christian burial will be held Wednesday, November 25th at 10:30 a.m. at St. Boniface Catholic Church in New Vienna, Iowa, with interment in St. Peter's and Paul Catholic Cemetery in Petersburg, Iowa. Vera was born on December 23, 1931, in New Vienna, Iowa, the daughter of Bernard and Teresa Wiskus Niehaus. She married William H. Mormon on April 25, 1954, at St. Boniface Catholic Church, New Vienna. Together, they had 11 children. Alan, spouse Pam of Petersburg, Iowa, Terry, spouse Joanne of Independence, Iowa, Randy, spouse Carmen of Petersburg, Iowa, Robert, spouse Kim of Omaha, Nebraska, Deb, spouse Gary Anstoder of Epworth, Iowa, William III, spouse Mary of Farley, Iowa, Bev, spouse John Nelson of Navarre, Florida, Mary, spouse Gary Schegel of Fort Worth, Texas, James, spouse Melinda of Morton, Illinois, Carl, spouse Lisa of Dyersville, Iowa, and Lynn, spouse Kevin Franzel Bobers of Omaha, Nebraska. She was the proud grandmother of 22 grandchildren, and the beaming great-grandmother of 26 great-grandchildren. Vera leaves behind one sister, Germaine Niehaus Foxen, and cousin Mary Lou Schmidt, along with many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents and her husband, William H. Mormon, her son, Alan Mormon, her grandson, Patrick Mormon, brothers Alvin, spouse Clara Ann Niehaus, Bernard, spouse Dolores Niehaus, and in-laws Richard, Dick, and Mary Arnes, Harlan and Julita Friedman, and William Schmidt. Vera will be missed by many. Her family has a lost a treasure, their rock and matriarch. Her kind, gentle spirit will be a light that continues to shine through her children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. The family extends sincere gratitude to the care and compassion of those that brought a loving touch to their mother, the Stonehill Care Facility nurses, care and liturgical staff, and administrator Peggy Stockel, Hospice of Dubuque Dr. Mark Herman, Dr. Tony Heer, Dr. Garrett Ridgely, and Dr. Amy Evan, and Dr. Tausif Khan. Information available and condolences accepted at www.kramerfuneral.com. Cards and letters may be directed to the family and care of Kramer Funeral Home, 750 12th Avenue, Southwest, Dyersville, Iowa, 52040. Moving to sports, 2020 Telegraph Herald All-Area Volleyball Team Coach of the Year, Jackie Arensdorf, Dubuque Hempstead. Meaningful journey. Arensdorf leads alma mater back to state volleyball tourney by Brendan West, Telegraph Herald. When it came to playing organized volleyball, Jackie Arensdorf thought her playing days were over after she graduated from Dubuque Hempstead 18 years ago. Even as a career backup for the Mustangs, just being part of the program had given the former Jackie Kennedy so much. She was a member of the two state tournaments team. She met lifelong friends, and the lessons instilled by wearing that green jersey were things Arensdorf knew she was going to take with her the rest of her life. But it turns out volleyball wasn't done with her, not yet. Quote, I went and toured Clark. They asked me what I did in high school, Arensdorf said. They said we needed volleyball players. You should play volleyball. I switch flipped in my mind. Why not try? Just give it all that I've got. I started lifting, getting more reps in the gym by myself, working on my vertical, end quote. The following fall, Arensdorf was a freshman starter for Clark. Later, she'd go on to start for Lawrence College across town. It's a story that Arensdorf routinely brings up with her players in a second year guiding the Mustangs. The amazing feeling that comes with devotion to a sport returns with the ultimate rewards, and how sometimes the best lessons taught within a high school volleyball program are fully realized after taking that green jersey off. I'm so sorry that you guys can hear my cats. This year, a demanding season that will be remembered for the uncertainty hanging over the every volleyball match. Because of the coronavirus, Arensdorf said the game delivered the ultimate gift. She watched as 60 Hempstead players from varsity on down sacrificed for months, and in the end, the Mustangs found themselves among the best in the state of Iowa. It is an experience the Telegraph Herald Volleyball Coach of the Year believes will stay with her players forever, just as it has for Arensdorf. She said that her experience with this game carries beyond the court into her family life, marriage, friendships, and career. Quote, to that, I think, is the biggest success, end quote, she said. Quote, if you just learn volleyball, that's great, but some of the things they learned this year, they're never going to forget, end quote. Sacrifice wasn't exclusive to Hempstead in 2020. Teams across the country constantly verged on the possibility that once-in-a-century pandemic would threaten to pull the plug on their seasons. Given all that could have happened to unravel this year, 2020 presented a class of coaches all worthy of the Telegraph Herald's top honor. Quote, there is a lot of pressure having a team with as much talent as they have, Arensdorf said. I honestly think it's easier going into a season with a team with less talent because there's less pressure on you. There's less expectations. But with that pressure comes that much more reward when you do meet those expectations. COVID was on our mind every second of every day. These girls were asked to sacrifice so much more than a normal state team has to. They did the work on the court. They did the work in the weight room. But then on top of that, they have to stay home. They have to sacrifice their sophomore, junior, senior year of not being a normal teenager, which is just asking so much of teenagers. And they did it. They sacrificed. End quote. When it came time to play, Arensdorf's Mustangs time and again displayed all of the traits that carry teams far in any campaign, let alone the tumultuous one that took place. Anchored by Telegraph Herald Player of the Year Corinne Meyer, Hempstead compiled a 20-6-1 overall record, appeared in every Iowa Class 5A poll this season, and concluded with a trip to the 5A state quarterfinals in a four-set loss to top-ranked West Des Moines Dowling. Those efforts earned Arsendorf the Mississippi Valley Conference Divisional Coach of the Year honor. Going in, Arsendorf said she knew her team had the experience and talent to get there, so she emphasized the longer-term lessons Hempstead gave her back during her playing days. Arsendorf used team-building activities to infuse cohesion, camaraderie, and positive energy that she believes pushed the Mustangs to reach their potential. Each Hempstead player, for example, wrote a word that empowers her on a practice ball. Every once in a while, that ball with the uplifting word would bounce the way of the player who wrote it during a drill, reminding her why she was here. Another team bonding exercise required Mustangs players to tell each other what they most admired about one another. Arsendorf believes those activities bonded her players permanently, and that chemistry showed with how fluid Hempstead played on the court this year. Quote, I think it played a big role, she said. We have had plenty of talent in every part of our game. We're coming back from having an outstanding defense. We built up in the offseason to have an incredible offense. Our serving became more aggressive overnight, and then the team chemistry was kind of the missing piece. I joked all year that we would be our biggest competitor, and this is how we beat that competitor, by reminding ourselves why we're here and staying positive on the court, end quote. Even into her 30s, Arsendorf believes there's a lot left for the game to teach her, as with the way she surprised herself, taking a junior varsity high school career to a starting career at a Division III school. 2020 served as a shock to both Arsendorf and her player. The realization of a disbelief that 2020 could indeed produce a rewarding outcome. 2 years into guiding Hempstead's, Arsendorf said she's evolved as a coach. She said she's more disciplined. She's leaned on staff to help make the Mustangs program into a cohesive unit she envisioned when she first took the reins. Volleyball has more in store for Arsendorf as she continues. There's no knowing what rewards the game will bring. She just knows that the best way to unearth them is to continue on the path that yielded such a satisfying season at Hempstead. Quote, the number one thing is that these kids are not just a talented team. They left the season being better women, being better friends, being better daughters, Arsendorf said. They realized that their potential in life and what they learned this season and this year is going to carry on so much farther into their life, in their workplace, into their marriage and relationships down the road, end quote. In Tri-State section, Jackson County Hospital nears completion. Officials look for options to repurpose the old facility by Annie Mell, Maquita, Iowa. Early next year, the upgraded Jackson County Regional Health Center will be open and ready to better assist patients with both everyday maladies as well as those seeking treatment for COVID-19. Quote, there will be some advantages for treatment of patients with COVID, end quote, said hospital president Kurt Coleman. Quote, we did make some changes to our design in the building, in the heating and ventilation system about halfway through the project, because when we originally designed the building, COVID was not a concern. We did go back and address some of those issues, end quote. Coleman said construction on the county's new $37 million hospital should be completed by late December, with its opening day planned for February 11th. Quote, we are really excited, end quote, Coleman said. Quote, this has been a long time coming for us and our staff, and we do think that the new hospital facility is something that people are really proud of, end quote. Thanks to federal aid from the CARES Act and other COVID-19 financial assistance programs, the project has remained in budget, he said. The new hospital, located at 601 Hospital Drive in Maquita, will be 72,000 square feet, about 55,000 square feet smaller than the current facility, but will still have all the same healthcare services. Quote, the biggest benefit is that the space will be more easily accessible, end quote, Coleman said. Quote, it will be a lot easier to find your way around. The building isn't so expansive. It is much more compact and efficient. It will be easier for patients to get around, end quote. Coleman added that the new facility will also have a better air ventilation system, helping lessen the spread of COVID-19. Quote, it comes with having upgraded air handling systems that allow us to create spaces for what they call negative airflow, he said. What negative airflow means is that more air is coming into the room than going out of the room. end quote. Earlier this year, the hospital's board of directors met with the Maquoketa City Council and Jackson County Economic Alliance to discuss the fate of the old hospital with hopes of gaining residents' input, and David Heyer, senior advisor with the alliance, quote, most of the people who were there were thinking for residential purposes, he said. Certainly that type of use would be considered most appropriate, end quote. Iyer said the hospital board is hoping to put together a request for proposal at the end of this year in hopes of talking with local developers who may be interested in purchasing the old hospital and either repurposing some of the buildings or building a completely new structure on the 12-acre lot. Quote, I have talked with developers who have different perspectives, he said. There will be some representatives of the hospital board and our office to evaluate the various proposals, and we will evaluate what we think will be the best interest for the community, end quote. Our next article, Virus Could Put Lid on Thanksgiving Drunk Driving, by Eric Hogstrom. Local law enforcement officials say this year's COVID-19 restrictions could curb the incidence of drunk driving during Thanksgiving week. Quote, the Wednesday night before Thanksgiving is commonly referred to as the biggest bar night of the year, end quote, said Dubuque County Sheriff Joe Kennedy. Quote, I'm not sure how much truth there is to that, but they are usually very busy, end quote. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, busy bars during Thanksgiving week can contribute to an increase in impaired driving cases. The agency reports that from 2014 to 2018, the latest five-year period with complete data, more than 800 people died in alcohol-impaired crashes between the Wednesday before Thanksgiving through the Monday morning after the holiday. Also during that five-year period, 47% of drivers between the ages of 21 and 34 who were involved in fatal car crashes on Thanksgiving Eve were impaired by alcohol. Quote, I know from past experience that the Wednesday before Thanksgiving was one of the busiest nights out, end quote, Joe Davies County Sheriff Kevin Turner said. Turner said Joe Davies County had two crashes on Thanksgiving Eve in 2018 and 2019, but no drunk driving arrest. Grant County Sheriff Nate Dreckham said that Wednesday night before Thanksgiving is a busy bar night, but that local safe driving programs have reduced drunk driving cases during the holiday. Quote, we hope that people continue to use the resources available to get home safely, end quote, Dreckman said. However, one such resource, the Southern Grant Road Crew Program, announced in June that it would remain closed during the coronavirus pandemic. Quote, for Thanksgiving 2020, I believe COVID will have an impact on the amount of people out and about, as you can already see it on a daily basis, end quote, Dreckman said. Lieutenant Ted McClellan said Dubuque police don't typically see a large increase in impaired driving arrests during Thanksgiving Eve, and that COVID-19 restrictions could reduce the risk further this year. Quote, this year, with the bars being closed at 10, there is a potential that less people will be out and people being home earlier, end quote, he said. Kennedy said COVID-19 restrictions could impact all driving during Thanksgiving. Quote, with many states imposing restrictions on gatherings, we may see a reduction in travel during that period, end quote, he said. In national news, Michigan legislative leader, President Didn't Ask for Election Interference, by David Eager of the Associated Press, Lansing, Michigan. President Donald Trump did not ask Michigan Republican lawmakers to, quote, break the law or interfere, end quote, with the election during a meeting at the White House, a legislative leader said Sunday, a day before canvassers plan to meet about whether to certify Joe Biden's 154,000 vote victory in the battleground state. House Speaker Lee Chatfield was among seven GOP legislators who met with Trump for about an hour on Friday amid his long-shot efforts to block Biden's win. Quote, there was this outrage that the president was going to ask us to break the law, he was going to ask us to interfere, and that just simply didn't happen, end quote. He told Fox News of the highly unusual meeting. He did not elaborate on what was discussed, except to say the delegation asked for additional federal aid to help Michigan's coronavirus response. Michigan's Elections Agency has recommended that the November 3rd results, including Biden's 2.8 percentage point victory, be certified by the Board of State Canvassers, which has two Democrats and two Republicans. The Republican National Committee and the State Republican Party wanted the board to adjourn for 14 days to investigate alleged irregularities in Wayne County, the state's largest and home to Detroit. Staff for the State Elections Bureau said that claimed irregularities, even if verified, would not significantly affect the outcome. The Michigan Democratic Party said the total number of Detroit votes implicated by imbalanced precincts, where the number of ballots does not equal the number of names on the poll book, is at most 450 or 0.029% of the margin separating Biden from Trump. Quote, the certification process must not be manipulated to serve as some sort of retroactive referendum on the expressed will of the voters. That is simply not how democracy works, end quote. Chairwoman Lavora Barnes wrote to the board on Sunday. If the board does not confirm the results in the Michigan Supreme Court does not subsequently order it to do so, Chatfield said, quote, now we have a constitutional crisis, end quote. He and other Republicans, however, have indicated that they would not undermine the voters' will. Quote, Michigan election law clearly requires that the state's electors must be those nominated by the party that received the most votes, not the legislator, end quote, says a stock email House Republicans are sending in response to people who contact their offices. Experts on Michigan election law have said that state board's authority is limited in scope and that it must certify the results now that all 83 counties have reported theirs to the state. There is concern, though, because Trump personally called the two Republicans on Wayne County's board last week and said, and they said a day later that they were rescinding their previous vote following an earlier deadlock, but it was too late. Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkley, a Republican who met with Trump, suggested in a Sunday tweet that the state canvassers might, quote, take the full time allowed by law to perform their duties, end quote, instead of voting today, and said, quote, it's inappropriate for anyone to exert pressure on them, end quote. In our last article, Trump allies appear to make false argument about his 2016 transition by Jonathan Lemire, Associated Press, Washington. It's not just President-elect Joe Biden's transition that's under a microscope. President Donald Trump and his allies are harking back to his own transition 4 years ago to make a false argument that his own presidency was denied a fair choice for a clean launch. Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany laid out the case from the White House podium last week, and the same idea has been floated by Trump's personal lawyer and his former director of National Intelligence. The comparisons are part of a broader attempt by Trump and his team to undermine the legitimacy of Biden's elections and his right to an orderly transition by unspooling mistruths about both his election season and the Trump's treatment 4 years ago. Quote, it's worth remembering that this president was never given an orderly transition of power. His presidency was never accepted, end quote, McEnany told reporters who questioned the Trump administration's refusal to cooperate with the Biden transition. But the situations are far different. The day after her defeat in 2016, Democrat Hillary Clinton conceded, quote, Donald Trump is going to be our president, she said. We owe him an open mind and the chance to lead, end quote. The next day, President Barack Obama invited the president-elect to the White House and visited with him in the Oval Office. Obama's aides offered help to the Trump's incoming staffers. Quote, my number one priority is in the coming 2 months is to try to facilitate a transition that ensures our president-elect is successful, end quote, Obama said. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, November 23rd on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. My name is Erin. You can find a recording of today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org at any time. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day.